Welcome to the Church Multiplication Collective podcast. Podcast designed to help you multiply like never before. I'm your host, Ed Love, and I oversee the Church Multiplication Collective, which is an intentional community of Wesleyan leaders committed to discovering, developing, and deploying workers for the Lord's harvest. I want to give a little special shout out to our friends at Global Partners who are sponsoring this podcast. They are amazing there and doing some amazing work around the globe. You can find out more about the Global Multiplication Movement at globalpartnersonline.org and jump into the worldwide mission. Well, today we are going to be talking with Kenneth Wagner. I'm really excited about this today, who is leading right now United Church in Dover, Delaware, which has been a new church. It launched in the fall of 2015. So it's just a little baby, but it's really grown through the years and has really a unique story to tell. So I'm excited about this. Kenneth and Sherry, his wife, they dreamed about this church that would be for the city rather than just in the city. I like that. And they believed in starting a church that would love Delaware until their heart beat like God's. That's a big vision. Well, that vision has become a reality, and God is moving all over the place. And I'm excited to talk about this topic today. Here's what we're going to drop into. We want to pick Kenneth's brain here and his heart a little bit. And as he shares a story, we want to kind of focus on how to grow a new church after launch day. So sometimes that's what we all build up to, and we in the church planning realm, we move towards that big launch day, and we're so excited about that day. And then figure after that day, we'll figure out what to do when we get there. And sometimes we struggle through that first year to actually continue to grow. And so Kenneth's story kind of has some pieces to it that will help us, I think, get a better picture of how to grow that church through that first year. And so I'm excited about this. So welcome, Kenneth. Glad you're here.
What's going on, man? So thankful to be on with you guys today.
Yeah, glad to have you here to share a little bit of your story. I think this is going to be so helpful to all of us. And before we really drop into some of the nitty gritty, why don't you just give a little bit of the background here, backstory to United?
Absolutely. I graduated from Southern Wesleyan University in Central South Carolina in 2008. And so right after my time at Southern Wesleyan, I jumped into a student ministry position at Calvary Wesleyan Church in Harrington, Delaware. So from 2008 to 2015, I served under Pastor Ken Figgs. He was the senior pastor there. And during my time, me and my wife, we led a student ministry. We met on Friday nights, which was absolutely insane. And we saw like 200-300 students show up every single Friday night, man. And during our time there, we saw about 800 students give their life to Jesus. And so it's absolutely mind-blowing and a cool time for us coming straight out of college, going into this ministry and just seeing God do some really cool things. And one of the crazier stories from that time is I serve now with guys who were in high school when I started at CWC. And so two of the guys that were in our youth group are now on our executive team at our church now. Mm-hmm. So pretty cool story of how God just goes full circle with things like that.
Yeah. And so give us a little bit of the storyline, how United came about and,
Absolutely. So in college, I just had this feeling that God was going to lead me to start a church. I heard something Craig Groeschel said one time. He said, in order to reach people that nobody's reaching, we got to do things that nobody's doing. Uh-huh. And man, I felt that kind of clearly led to like a church plant, and then starting to hear things, the greatest way to reach people in North America is church planting. And so all these things started to fall into place. And so I think from there was some early seeds that were planted in college for me for church planting. And so from the very beginning of going to Calvary Wesleyan Church, I was, me and Pastor Ken, our lead pastor, we were super open with that conversation of what that could look like one day. And we knew that wasn't the focus, that wasn't the plan, but knowing that could be something that we could revisit in the future. And so that's kind of where this crazy idea came from.
Yeah. So when you were sent out from your church to start United, what did that relationship look like with the parent church?
I don't think it could be any healthier. I mean, I think that's probably, we'll get to this in a bit, but that's probably been why we have seen what we've seen. We've seen God do what he does, is just because his blessing truthfully follows unity. His blessing follows honor. And so I tried super hard to be as clear and transparent with our sending church as possible. They ended up paying my salary for a full year, which was a massive head start for us.
Yeah.
Our pastor, we got it in front of the church in January of 2015 before we launched that September. And our pastor just literally said to everybody in the church, if this is something you feel called to do, I mean, we were planting 25 miles up the road from where my church was that I'd served for the last 7 years. But he said, if this is something you feel called to do, man, the door is completely open. And from that point, we ended up having about 80 people who got on board and were part of our launch team. And so just that relationship has been amazing. He's still our biggest fan. He still calls and celebrates with me, and I call and celebrate with him, and just checking in. We'll have meals every now and then. And so it's been a great relationship. Part of the biggest part, I think, of why we've seen God do what he's done.
Yeah, that's interesting you'd say it like that. And just recognizing that relationship being so key. And so often that relationship sometimes gets, you know, twisted or gets confused or, you know, it just doesn't seem healthy. And that's actually a situation where it's like, you guys did it right. And you must have had conversation after conversation that really kept that, the lines of communication really clear, the expectations really clear. And what a beautiful picture, though, of the church multiplying, though. I mean, that Pastor Figs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
That just has to be acknowledged. The sacrifice and the willingness to release you into that new ministry.
Right. And we're not talking about a massive church. I mean, it's an extremely healthy church, but yeah. You know, you're talking about a church of 700 to 800 at this time, and basically releasing 10% of their people to go be a part of this. I mean, that, can you imagine the feeling of what's going to happen to us? Yeah. How is this going to work out? Like, but truly the kingdom perspective has been overwhelming for me. And it's something that I'll never forget on this side of it. And so, you know, when it comes around for us to be able to do it, it'll be almost like a kingdom mandate for me to remember that. And for me to treat our, you know, planter the same way when that comes down the road.
Absolutely. So when you launched, this was fall of 2015. So you're approaching your third year, right? Third year anniversary coming soon.
No, it'll be 2 year anniversary coming up.
Just 2 years of this fall?
In September, yeah. 2 years coming up this fall.
I can do math. so you're just two, but give us just a little picture of just the amount of people that showed up on that first launch Sunday, the amount of people who didn't show up the next Sunday, and then just where you went through that next year.
Yeah.
So give us a picture of just your growth curve.
Yeah, one of the things I think you said earlier, and I just kind of reiterate, is I think that so many people prepare for launch day, but they don't prepare for the church. And I equivalent this to, like, people get prepared for a wedding, but they're not prepared for the marriage.
So I
find that so true, is that guys, it's this massive buildup. They've been looking forward to this one day. This one day comes, and then, oh man, 6 days later, this happens again, you know?
I know.
My gosh. And so
Now what do we do?
Yeah, now I have to preach every week. Oh, okay. I've spent the last year preparing this message. Okay.
Yep. But,
so for us, September of 2015 was when we launched, and we saw 515 people show up to our very first Sunday morning. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. We started, you know, we opened the doors, people started coming in, they kept coming in and kept coming in. And it was one of the most incredible things that I've been a part of.
Now, so, what did your kind of pre-launch look like?
Yeah. So we followed pretty heavily the ARC process, which is Association of Related Churches. And so some of the vision nights that we had, just getting out into the community. So once a month we did vision nights where we fed people. We kept them for an hour and a half. So we fed people. We laughed together. I shared a little bit of the vision of the church, and then we sent them home. And so that was kind of consistent for the months leading up to the church. And then we were serving like crazy. We were serving the city. I mean, and it was so cool at that point because, you know, when you serve your city, when you don't have a church to invite them to, it doesn't look like a publicity stunt. It literally is. That's who you are. And so people started to see, like, wow, they're serious about this. They're not just saying they're a church that's in the city, but they really are a church that's for the city. And so that was kind of the big momentum things that we started to meet people and put ourselves in different situations. We have a thing called Dover Days where the summer before we launched, we went and we were trying to hand out little cards inspiring purposeful acts of generosity. And so some of them were like, hey, thank a policeman or a fireman today. Write a thank you card today. Text three people and tell them they're awesome today. So we just we did a lot of that stuff leading up to the very first Sunday. So yeah, and that was the culmination of all that was September 20th, 2015. We saw 515 people show up.
Yeah, that's amazing. And usually the way it goes in church planning is, you know, the next couple of weeks, you wonder what's going to happen. And there's a lot of people that come out on your first launch day when it's, you know, just everything's new and they're just kind of the well-wishers just saying, hey, and just love what you're doing, but they're not going to stay, right?
Right.
So you always wonder, you know, that's the great question in church planning, you know, is who comes back and who's getting connected here. And so a couple weeks later, what happens? Give us that.
Yeah, we dropped down a couple weeks later. Our fourth week was our lowest week. So we dropped to 385. And that was kind of the new baseline. And honestly, from there, we continued to grow. And it was one of the things we got around to our first Christmas. And we saw for Christmas that year was pretty awesome. It was like 455 people. So we were back almost up to where we had launched. And then in that January, we went from one experience, we call them experiences, one experience to two experiences. And that was actually the Sunday after my son was born. So he was in the NICU. I didn't even preach the first Sunday. We went to two experiences. And so we went from a church of about 450 to a church of about 700-800 in just one fell swoop. So it was crazy, man. We just seeing this trend, this up and to the right thing, just continuing to play out from there.
Yeah. That's amazing. And just bring us up to East. We just had Easter last week. And what was that like for you?
So this past Sunday, we had 128 people respond to Christ and claim him as Savior. That was awesome. And then we had 2,607 people on our campus for Easter Sunday. Just absolutely incredible.
What?
Yeah, that's what I said. What? Where are we going to put all these people?
What do I do?
Yeah.
What do I do with all these people?
One of the key parts of that is back in September at our 1 year anniversary, we moved locations. And so we would have been doing about 14 different gatherings at our old location. So we moved into a high school. We were at a performing arts theater and we moved now into the local high school that has a 921 seat auditorium. It's just beautiful. Third year they've been in the school. And so it's just been an incredible partnership as well.
So what'd you do? Three gatherings then on Easter?
We did 8, 9, 30, and 11 and 9, 30, and 11, you couldn't have fit another soul in the building. So it was pretty fantastic.
Yeah. And when you really think about it, you know, it's like, you know, those are the people that are now entering into the kingdom of God.
It's amazing.
Formerly weren't connected. And how beautiful is that to know that there are that many people in Dover, Delaware, which is, how big is the town, city?
About 37,000 people. 37. Yeah.
And to know that this new church has connected all those people, and just powerful. I always think about, you know, what would happen if, just for those lives, like what would happen if you didn't go there, you know?
Wow.
Where would those people be? Like the 128 people accepted Christ last Sunday, where would they be? You know, where would their lives be? Much less their eternity, you know?
For sure.
So that's just amazing. Give us a little bit of just, I mean, with increased growth comes a lot of challenges, right? What would you say are some of your greatest challenges in that first year?
I would say for me, it was just keeping up. You know, I think that we saw such crazy metrics that, and a guy named Josh Mawney told me one day, he said, metrics breaks everything. Literally, numbers break everything. And so we would create a system, and then three weeks later or 6 weeks later, the system was completely irrelevant. And so we're like creating systems on how to get people onboarded and serving. And then we'd see like, oh, that doesn't work. Fantastic. Okay, let's start over and do that again. And so we would redo that. And so then that was that part of the systems. And then staffing was a huge thing. I mean, we've hired for growth and not from growth. And so we've tried to stay ahead of the curve on that. And then for me, some of the biggest challenges is just getting out of stuff that I enjoy. I mean, that I know that I can't be involved in at this point because it would slow down the whole thing. And so,
what are those things,
man? I mean, just some of the details of the creative process, man. I'll be honest. I love talking, you know, as far as nuts and bolts as goes, set design. I love talking about like how, you know, if you're talking about, you know, our serving teams, how greeters greet, how host team hosts, like how they do those logistical things. And honestly, I've had to kind of realize that for the sake of everybody, I've got to back out of it, or it's just going to be completely slowed down. And understanding that, you know, your voice just weighs a lot more when you're in those settings and meetings. And so even if it's not the best idea, if you said it, sometimes it happens, you know, that's the way, fortunately it goes sometimes. But
well, that's interesting. You're, in a sense, your greatest challenge was releasing control.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
Being willing to step back, empower others.
Yep.
Which is so difficult to do in a new church, isn't it?
Well,
because this is your baby.
That's right? I never got a chance to like be intricately involved. I mean, it was like from the start, just bam. And then people not understanding that I can't be everywhere.
Yep.
And at everything. I mean, that was, we never were a quote unquote small church. And so, people that came with that small church kind of mentality, it was like, hey, I'm not trying to be like not involved in your life. You just don't understand the whole, what all this encompasses. So that was wild.
Well, and it's interesting, you know, you, and it's rare. I mean, what I think you've experienced, but you broke through some of those barriers that a lot of church plants have, like, for instance, the 200, you know, person church barrier.
Right.
That's pretty typical.
Absolutely.
And it's almost like you were already past that, which, have you kind of thought about how that may have set your leadership up in a way to actually continue the growth pattern? Do you think that was a factor?
Yeah. And I think that's one of the greatest benefits of launching large. I mean, people, you know, people will say launch large, don't do, you know, and I think what it did for us is, you know, a 200 barrier. I mean, that could be, some people can be there for 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's not, there's nothing wrong with that, because that's just reality. But the good thing about launching large and is you break through some of those barriers that are almost impossible to work through just organically. And so, that's why the runway of the time that we spent preparing for our church plant, we we didn't rush into this thing. We actually, you know, methodically worked through it. And I think that's some of the biggest things that I think church planters, they want to plant, and they want to plant today. And most of the time that's because they're in a situation where they feel like they want to show the leader how to do it. And so they want to get out and do that, spread their own wings, when in reality, man, if you'll never be given authority if you can't serve under authority. And so I think some of the guys that are in a hurry need to slow down and just watch what God does. I don't think our story has to be rare.
Yeah. 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 That's interesting. Good insight into that. I think it's one of those things where you're going to desire to break through that 200 barrier at some point.
Right.
Why not break through sooner rather than later, you know?
Yeah.
But under 200, there is this expectation. I experienced this myself in my church plants, but there is this expectation that you are involved in everything, and that you, you're needed.
Right.
All these places, which kind of hinders your leadership potential in a way, you know?
Absolutely.
What about some of your blessings in this process? So what would you say your greatest blessings would be as you've planted United?
Yeah, it would have to be life change. I mean, period. There's no second best thing. I mean, nothing even comes close to that. It's just the life change that we've seen. I mean, I think of a guy named Gary who was, he had gone through the process of getting on a team and was serving on a team. You know, he was just honest with us. He said, man, I still have questions. And, you know, I wasn't going to argue with him because he's showing up at 5:50 a.m. when the trailer shows up. And so, honestly, I don't care what you believe at 5:50 a.m. If you want to unload the trailer, let's go. You're on the team. So, but I'd say that jokingly, but man, we do have a threshold for people that aren't sure yet to serve in areas where it's safe. I mean, I think unloading a trailer is pretty safe. I think dropping some cables on the stage is pretty safe. And so Gary serves for a few weeks and we go into the Christmas season this past Christmas. And, I leaned over to our, pastor of creative. And I said, look, I said, Mark, Gary's going to receive Jesus today. And, I preached the first experience. He didn't raise his hand. I'm like, man. And so the second experience, I come back out, I'm preaching again. I'm like, man, let's go. And I get to the end. I'm like, if you want to, you know, receive Jesus today, and this is him to be your savior, raise your hand. And Gary's hand shoots up, and literally from the stage, almost like took off the stage and started running back to him. He was working back at the soundboard and kind of assisting the guy running sound. And man, it was just, that's what we do this for, is, you know, our statement is we live to see those far from God be united with Christ. And Gary is a definition of someone who is far from God, but man, he is now, you know, in a relationship with Jesus, and it's just powerful, powerful stuff.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And that's what it's all about, you know, running after the one lost sheep, you know.
Absolutely.
And keeping that focus, you know, can be, you know, sometimes a challenge still, because you know, when you have a lot of people who are just getting exposed to this new vision, there's a lot of connection you have to do, a lot of people that want to talk to you and get to know your heart. And how did you go about managing a lot of those relationships? And how that played out.
So early on, I mean, when we had reached to like that about 800 mark, we put in a role called campus director, and it was essentially a campus pastor role. And so this guy, Nick, is still on staff now. He's amazing. He stepped into the role of leading the teams of all the serving teams. But then he also, I mean, he would MC pretty much every week and be almost the face of the church. And so we were actually able to leverage a lot of that relational value. People, you know, they connected with Nick. And so Nick was able to carry some of that or a lot of that weight for me. And that's just been one of those things where, you know, everybody doesn't need to be close with me. They they need to be close with somebody. Like, I don't necessarily have to know your name, but somebody needs to know your name.
Yep.
And so like that's kind of the culture that we kind of talked about from the very beginning is like, that may be hard for some people to understand, but like, I don't have to be everybody's friend, but they do need a friend in our church. And so, whether that's through a serving team, whether that's through a group, whether that's through another staff member, whatever that's through. And so that was kind of the way I just had to be okay with saying no at times, man. And there were times where, you know, I said, if I get asked to do coffee or do one more meal, like I don't know if I can handle this. Like, I'm literally going to like scream. And so there's just times and seasons where that happens, but just understanding that, I think Pastor Stephen Furtick said this one time, he said, he was in a time where he was feeling like, man, people are coming and I'm not sure I can handle this. And he said, you know, God spoke to him and said, I can make you irrelevant as fast as I made you relevant. And so you either lean into it or you despise it. And so we just have decided to lean into it and figure out ways to make it sustainable.
Yeah. Excellent. So can you pinpoint some of those, we've been talking about this, but anything that's unique that helped contribute to the growth in the post-launch phase, anything that you would say, like, these are some of the factors or dynamics that really allowed us to experience that growth?
I think one of the things from the very beginning is, you know, we promised that it would be awesome. And when people came on the very first Sunday and we didn't lie to them, you know, so many times church plants, we send out mailers that this is going to be the most radical thing you've ever, the most dynamic kids ministry. And then people show up and they're like, no, there's like 18 churches that are more dynamic and have a better kids ministry. So like, I think that what we did promise, we did deliver. We didn't overpromise and underdeliver. And I don't say that like arrogantly. I'm just saying as church planners, we have to be careful what we promise to the people when they come. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you tell them that worship is going to be great and the girl singing has no business singing, like even in the shower, like then you've got bigger issues. I think another thing that kind of contributed to is that it never felt like a church plant. We didn't laugh off the awkward moments. We didn't laugh off we made sure that we were prepared. You know, I've been, you know, some church plants where it's like, the power flips or, you know, the lights don't work for that week or the sound. And there's times, again, there's times where things happen and it just hits the fan, but we made sure that it didn't feel like it. We didn't use that excuse from the beginning that, hey, we're new. This is a church plant. And I think that had a lot to do with the time that we spent from the calling to the planting. I talked about that a minute ago.
Just having a high level of excellence.
Yeah. And that's just part of who I am too. And so our team is kind of, they call that out of, you know, whether they're serving in the music area or they're serving in kids area, wherever they're serving, that there's just a high bar of excellence. I think that season from calling to planting, it allowed the culture to have time to crock pot in my heart. It wasn't microwaved. Like, this was like, we knew what it was going to feel like from day one. And, we didn't wait till we had people to build that feeling. We built that in advance. And so when people showed up, they're like, wow, this is literally like, this is the life-giving church that they promised it would be. The other thing I would say that is, you know, we've said from the beginning that we're not just going to be a church in the city, but for the city. And we've never let them wonder if that's true. I mean, whether it be from, you know, we just did hoodies for an entire elementary school and their teachers, they wanted a warm weather item. And so we bought hoodies for an entire school, whether it be, you know, just showing up all over the city, doing things, serving alongside organizations that aren't necessarily Christian organizations, but are doing great things. And so we've never let people wonder if that is true, that we are we for the city or are we not?
Yeah, that's excellent. I can see that playing out in your work there. And I think there's probably here's a leadership lesson, I think, in there with dealing with the excellence piece. It's easy for you to have a high level of excellency, and it's hard sometimes to create that in others. You know, what would you just say, how do you create that in your environment? You know, how did other people latch on and have a high level of excellence in their, in the way that they were leading?
Yeah, I think that that's kind of twofold for us. I mean, some of these people had served with me in student ministry for 4, 5, 6 years. And so they'd seen kind of the level of excellence that we were looking for. And then also the people that hadn't, I mean, we took them to places that displayed it. You know, we took them in the pre-launch stage. We took them to other churches that were in the vicinity of where we're going to be planting, and said, we took them to Sunday morning, and then we took them out to lunch and said, you know, what felt like us? What didn't feel like us? What was excellent? What wasn't excellent? It wasn't to pick that church apart, but to help everyone identify with what is excellence. And so, I mean, there's, you know, so we took people to churches where their music was excellent. And so we would sit down at lunch and they'd say, man, that was awesome. Those transitions and how they, that was just incredible. And there were some that weren't so good. And then there were some that were better at, you know, their greeting culture. I mean, they had people parking you. And when you got out of the car, man, you just felt like, man, this is, I'm here. And so like all of those pieces put together, whether it be where we visited or what was taught, I think that we kind of infused that with the top level leaders. And then we just watched the kind of the trickle down effect from there. So that's always been my approach, is take the top 10% of leadership, invest heavily in that top 10%, and watch what God does with that, because it just translates into all the way across the organization.
Yeah. You also said that you had time to let this vision really become like a crockpot vision.
Yeah.
How much time did you have?
So in July of 2013, that was literally when God dropped it on me, said, I want you to love Delaware until the heartbeat's like mine. And so literally July of 2013 to September of 2015 was when we launched. And so we took about 2 years in that launch process to get the training, to get the green light from, you know, Wesleyan Church, our organization. And we also got training through the ARC, which is both of those hand in hand were, man, it just put us down the road when it comes to being prepared and going into that. And then started just digging around whoever would meet with me, who was a church planter, I would get on their calendar as fast as I possibly could. So those are some of the things that like the time will help you do. And you can't, you only get one time to launch. And so you only get one time to make a first impression. And so it's best that you do that right. And whatever time that takes on the front end, if you need to fundraise more to get your salary and support up so that you could take 6 months longer, then man, that's the ticket.
Yeah. I think that is key to part of your story here. And so oftentimes, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people are putting more pressure on, or leaders feel pressure to, you know, either have more church plants, and so we got to pump them out quicker, we got to get them rolling, or we got to, maybe the planner feels the financial pressure, like, I got to get people tithing so I can, you know, be full-time ministry. And so we rush the process, and I've heard of some situations of, like, you know, church planters like 5-6 months and they're out. And then you watch that struggle kind of play out over the years. And it's just like, you know, I mean, everything is better in a crock pot, isn't it? You know,
come on.
It's like, you can't microwave church planting.
No, you can't.
I think that's a great insight here, because that allowed the vision to really, you were able to soak it all up and really hear from God, get clarity. Nothing was rushed.
Yeah. Ed, can I add something to that?
Yeah, go for it.
I just think that, like, when you have the understanding that how much is at stake in kingdom, like, it's worth waiting for. I mean, there's so many kingdom dollars invested in church plants. I mean, the average church plant would probably, if I had to, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's probably somewhere around $200,000 to $250,000 when it comes to salary and raising money and all-in cost. And that's $250,000. You rush that, and you're the guy who in 6 months just flames out. like that doesn't do anything for the kingdom. You know, if you would have raised $20,000 more, waited 6 months, or waited until you were in a peak season, that's one thing. People launch and they launch on Christmas, or they launch on Easter when everybody else is going back to their mom's church. You know, I think that's some of the stuff that's there too. So find the peak season and understand what the kingdom resources that are at stake.
Yeah. Now there's a good point, right there. Yeah, that might connect to, this other question I was going to ask you, what obstacles, have you discovered that might hinder the growth in the first year? Any big obstacles?
Yeah, I think that unrealistic expectations. I think, I think in I'm 30, so my generation, we want to live in mom and dad's house without doing the work of mom and dad. And so I want to live in the size house that my parents live in, and not realizing that they're 30 years down the road. And so I'm in a portable, you know, location right now, in a portable setting. And I'm, you know, I go down to a 12 stone and hang out with Kevin Myers. And I'm like, man, I want a campus. Like, I just want one of your campuses. I don't even want the main campus. But like, how ridiculous is that? That's an unrealistic expectation. I think what that does is it gets your mind on this like mirage that, you know, right around the corner is going to be this nest egg of $2 million. So I can build this campus. And yeah, I just think those unrealistic expectations can really start to can bog you down if you go there. And so, yeah, I think that's for me, that would probably be the biggest one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. In this process, I mean, stuff has just gone so quick.
Yeah.
And I'd be curious to know, just how have you learned to pace yourself in this process? And maybe you can even talk to us just, you know, about your rhythms.
Yeah.
Your life rhythms, spiritual rhythms. What does that look like for you?
For sure. I mean, I'll just be raw in this and to say that, you know, the first fall when we launched, I mean, I'm sitting, I think in October, I'm sitting in a cardiologist office having palpitations.
Yep.
And finding myself, you know, the doctor looking at me and saying, look, you're either drinking too much caffeine and or you're too stressed. And I was like, yes, both. Yeah. And so he said, well, you can control one. You can control how much caffeine you take in, but you can't control the environment that you're in right now. And plus my wife was pregnant at the time. That's a whole nother little ditty there. But so I had to come to the grips that like, man, I'm not the savior of this thing. Like this is not my deal, in trying to keep the perspective that I can't create growth. I can't create momentum. I can do things that try to help that, but man, that's God's job. And I've tried to keep that perspective over the last like probably year and few months. And then also I would say just, you know, Friday is family day. You know, it's also my Sabbath. And especially since I have a 15-month-old. And so, man, one of my greatest goals is I want to be Jace's hero when he's 18, man. I want him to think I'm the cool. Actually, when he's 18, he'll probably think I'm an idiot still, but when he's 25, I want him to think that, man, I gave him just as much as I gave the church. And so, Friday has just become a day where it's a no. Like if anybody wants to meet, it's a no. If anybody wants to do something, it's a no. Anybody wants to, it's just, it's easy for me to say no in that. So that's been the little bit of the rhythm. And then one of the other things that's helped us as a staff, my staff get some boundaries, is we use a program called Basecamp that literally, if it's after five or on days off, it goes in Basecamp. And so there's like a message board. There's all kinds of, I mean, you can check that out, but it's incredible. But we don't get texts about work stuff outside of work hours. That's just something that we saw that becoming an issue, and people were, you know, trying to be with family time or out on date night, and they're getting, you know, blown up about this creative piece that needs to be done. And it's really not urgent. It might be important, but it's not urgent. And so that's all those things together. But knowing that I've still felt the weight, you still feel the weight. I mean, about 3 to 6 months in, you wonder if you're going to make it out alive. I mean, it's heavy. And any church planner I feel like I've talked to, it feels like that 6 month mark, if you can make it to that mark with sanity. And I don't say that to scare church planners. I just say that for reality. If you can make to that 6 month mark, man, you start to breathe a little bit more normal again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think the first 6 months you're wondering, are people really going to show up the next week? Yeah. Are they still going to show up? And so I still wonder that. I'm 18 months in. I'm like, God, you know, next week nobody could show up and the thing would be off the rails. But, you know, just trying to trust him on all that.
Yeah. So it's a unique balance, isn't it? I mean, because it's like you don't want to hold so tightly. Like you want to give it your best and work hard as if you're working for the Lord, you know. But it's like you still hold it loosely, you know.
Yeah.
Where you recognize it's not all on me, you know. This is God's church, and He's the head of the church. And I think sometimes we maybe switch roles with Jesus. Sometimes we try.
We try to.
We become the head. Yeah. You know? And so that's really helpful because that informs how you go about doing what you do. Appreciate you sharing that. Would you give us, just as we wrap up here, just give us kind of your multiplication plan? Like, I know that's a part of who you are. You want to see the church multiply. What does that look like for you?
Yeah. So for us, our primary focus right now is campusing. We've told our church a few weeks ago, kind of in a visionary talk, that we're preparing during the year of 2017 to launch our first campus in 2018. And so, you know, we don't know, we do know exactly where that is. We haven't said that yet, but we are getting kind of the pump prime so that people understand that, hey, we're not always going to be one family under one roof. We will be one family under many roofs. And so that's one of the things that we are preparing for. I mean, we have people come into our church from as far as 35 minutes north, but as far south as an hour and 15 minutes. Wow. And that's not an anomaly, this southern part. And so like, we're just looking at this as like, God, where do you want us to go? And we're feeling this draw towards the south, the southern part of Delaware, and just wondering, hey God, where's next, and trying to figure out this campusing model, and also knowing that, you know, at some point God's going to call a church planter out of our church. You know, we're primarily focusing on campusing inside of Delaware, but outside of Delaware, we're more than open. God, who is it? Because the kindness and the generosity that was shown to me, man, I'm excited about the day where I get to pay that forward to a church planter.
Pass it on. So you can see your strategy of multiplication is both and.
Yeah, I think primarily our focus will be campusing, and if a church planter comes to us internally and says, hey man, I've been serving as student pastor for the last 2 years and God's calling me to this, man, I mean, who am I, you know? My pastor gave me a chance, and so I'm gonna pass that on.
Well, maybe a future church planner just heard this podcast and
come get on staff.
Come on board.
Let's go.
Man, Kenneth, I really appreciate you sharing your story and some of your learnings along the way today. This has been amazing and filled with great stuff. And just appreciate your humility in all of it. And we just really, I think, just are so thankful for your work and what you're doing in Dover, Delaware, and it's going to spread and it's going to expand, and God's using you in so many unique ways. So thanks for being so faithful and stepping out in faith.
Man, I appreciate you having me on the podcast today.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, this has been the Church Multiplication Collective podcast. We'll see you all next time. Peace.